Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And David, Dwight decided to go and check on Hakainde Chelema, and that's, don't tell him I said that. And David will be joining us as usual later. So until then, it's just you and I for now. So let's just, let's just do the usual, which is just pick a topic and then fly on from there. Don't worry, I already did the first part, which is pick a topic. Now, last year, at the end of last year, the African Union representatives, as they always do, they meet pretty much all throughout the year to discuss several issues. Now, at the end of last year, they met to discuss financing for transport infrastructure on the African continent, on the African Union level. And before I continue, teachers and police officers, congratulations in advance. Just check the calendar. Now that we have that out of the way, moving on. See, I'll never forget you guys because you are very important to the tranquility, whatever that means. Anyway, so they met in Luanda. And if you don't know where Luanda is on the African continent, I can't help you at this point. This country is 30 plus years old. It's a fully grown adult at this point. Must start taking responsibility of her own actions. Now, I don't know why all countries are here. So they met and they had obviously, this was a 2-3 days event, and at the end of this event, they meet, they make decisions, declarations, and all that. This is where we are with regards to transport infrastructure in this particular event, and so this is how we propose moving forward. And of all the events, just like all the events that they discussed all throughout the year, that is 2025, when they met for their 39th ordinary session, which happens at the beginning of every year, but the ordinary session is the special one, which only takes place at the headquarters, and that's in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Of all the events that they had, because the document that they compiled back in February, and this is a very difficult to forget event, because this is why I more often make fun of this event that it was organized by someone who just who got dumped before Valentine's Day, because the event took place exactly on Valentine's Day, and I can imagine bro was like, you know what, if I can celebrate Valentine's Day, neither are you guys. So we are gathering and we are talking about the future of the political and economic future of this continent on Valentine's Day. Oh yeah, come on, let's meet in Ethiopia. So they met for the 39th ordinary sessions. That was in February. So they had a lot of things to talk about. And if you're regularly listening here on Home Run, then you must be aware at this point that we have referenced this event several times, because they compiled 100-something long page documents where they basically said, we commit, we affirm, we commit, we affirm, we regret, we condemn, just the usual, the whole nine yards. Now, our main focus today is going to be on transport infrastructure. There's a lot, infrastructure is a very broad term, so which is why the Luanda Declaration sort of like zones down, zones in on just the infrastructure, and specifically on transport. And now, this is transport, of course. We are talking rail, road, sea, air, all of it. And this is actually the part where I would just start, bashing them. Don't worry, I will. because, well, turns out we have been trying to connect African roads for 50 plus years. So let's go back, 50 plus years. 1971, the African continent. Now, you have to understand at this point, you know, Namibia is, of course, a bunch of guys allergic to the sun. It still thinks they're better than everyone else. So South Africa is in the same boat at this point. So, but then the wind of change just came and swept all that nonsense aside. And then fast forward to 1990, we have our independence. 1994, South Africa has its independence. And now African countries, of course, have been achieving independence from the 1960s. So coming this way, which is why countries like Zambia and Botswana, their independence goes back to the 50s. Basically, 60s, that's where you now start talking about countries like Nigeria and Ghana. Now, here's the thing. 1971, of course, not all African countries at this point have achieved their independence. And Namibia is one of those countries that was just still under, apartheid, basically. Yeah, you know, this was the time when you needed some kind of, I don't know how that pass looked like for you to be in place like the place that I am sitting right now, which is Klein Windhoek at certain hours of the day or the night. Seeing that I knock off late sometimes, I can only imagine how many passes I would have exhausted by now to get to cheers. So shout out to those that gave their life so that some of us can basically come to Klein Windhoek, make noise, and leave pretty much any time we want. It's something that we basically take for granted, but we shouldn't. And until you actually think of it in in historical terms, more like with a historical reference, that's when you begin to appreciate some of the rights that we just don't appreciate as much. Now, just putting a pause on that, on my way home yesterday, just scrolling through social media, I came across a video of what seemed to be, of a gentleman who seemed to be speaking with a West African accent. I'm suspecting or thinking Nigeria. It's just a skit, so it's just something that is intended, as humor. But what he said was, Namibia is the only country where there is an announcement before the power is cut off. Now, look, it's funny. I laughed. But then I started asking myself one question, wait, that's not how things are in all countries? Because usually when there is going to be a pipe that is being repaired somewhere, that plays a major role in supplying water to my location. City of Windhoek lets you know. On this day, from this hour to this hour, there will be a power blackout because of this and this and this issue. And then they add on the beginning, somewhere we apologize for the inconvenience. And the comment section of that video was just killing me. So Namibians were, of course, having a good time in the comment section. And then someone pointed out that we don't really appreciate some of these conveniences that we enjoy because we enjoy them and then cross up and actually assume that it's the same everywhere we go. So, which is why I think we have got to travel a lot so that we can get exposed to something that is, to things in other countries that will, that will show us ways that other countries are better than ours, and things that will also show us the complete opposite of that, which is ways that our countries are better than others. Because when I tell you I laughed really loud, because first of all, my man is funny. Second, I couldn't help but just start thinking, okay, you know what? If Look, I thought it was just an international operation. Look, at the back of my mind, you know, naive, I know. But at the back of my mind, I always thought maybe, you know, it's a standard operating procedure for every authority in every country who is in charge of dispensing a certain service to the general public to notify them when there are about to be disruptions in the particular service. It turns out, in some countries, no. You are just in the middle of your cooking and the power goes and no one tells you when it's gonna come on again. And like, right. You know what? Actually, that makes me appreciate, a few things about my country. Actually, a lot. I have also, you know, come across a lot of, videos about, non-Namibian, mostly truck drivers. The things they say about our country, I'm like, really? Look, I've also come to, now, because of just these two scenarios, I've come to learn that, having certain luxuries that you don't really see because, you sort of you're used to seeing them every day. It's like, how do I put this? In the TV show, My Wife and Kids, the junior Kyle character, went to school one day. They were teenagers. Him and his younger sister. His younger sister's name is Claire. So they are in their teens, and of course they are in high school. So junior goes to school one day and then realizes that everyone is just talking about how hot his sister is. And he comes home and he finds his father in the sitting room and is like, so he starts a conversation with his father, who's Michael Kyle, and Junior goes like, everyone in school doesn't seem to shut up about Claire being hot, which is ironic because, I mean, I don't see how hot he is. And Kyle his father slaps him in the face, more like just slaps him just playful type of way, father-son bonding type of way, at the back of his head and tells him, that's because she's your sister, you idiot. Which makes a lot of sense. That guy that you are dreaming about every time you sleep. Ask her sister, you tell her, seriously? That guy? Of all people, that one? You don't see it when you are related. Turns out when it's a total stranger, it's just something else. And the same goes for guys. Someone out there is buying chocolate and, is buying chocolate and buying flowers and writing all kinds of poems for someone's, for someone's sister. And the brother of that particular sister is going, so let me get this straight. You're spending all that money on this one? Really? Now, take it from someone who has six of them, sisters. Just look at my in-laws and go like, seriously? You had a crush on this one? It's a natural design. It's supposed to be that way. Because the opposite actually is where you need to go towards 16, because that's just nuts. So I think that's sort of like the same thing that we are facing. It's the same thing that we face. It's like there are a lot of not luxuries. Let me just say the very fluid service provision. Fluid ways in that a lot of services are provided in our country that we don't really see until. But when people who are non-Namibian come to Namibia, especially those that come from that are coming from countries where the particular service is not offered, at least in terms of efficiency, it's not offered in their country in a way that they come to observe in Namibia. So they find it very interesting that how is this possible? Now, one lady, American, recently flew to India. She's a vlogger. She was in India and she found a type of cancer drug that cost about less than $3. US. Multiply that by 16, you will have the Namibian figures. So that gets less than $3. Like, that's how much it costs. Less than $3 in India. But in the US, it's over $1,000. So the price difference is literally what percentage is that? 1,000%? And you'll find a lot of videos about that with regards to, especially with regards to American, health services and pharmaceutical products. A lot of and you have a lot of Americans that fly to to other countries, basically outside of America, whether they're going to Asia, Europe, whether they come into Africa, when they found out that bread actually is not supposed to look like a sponge. I mean, there's a lot of this con out there. The point I'm making here is, I think you use a certain service or a certain product for a very long time that you get used to the way that it's provided, the way that that service is provided to you, that you don't see anything wrong with it, at least not in a way that you begin to see once you are exposed to different ways of doing. Like, if I left Namibia, for example, and went to a country where the municipality of the town that I'm staying in that particular town does not give an announcement on when the power disruptions happen, I would miss it if we took so much. Because I'm in the middle of my cooking and the power goes off. Now what am I supposed to do? It turns out, in countries, especially Niger, they have, a lot of them have generator. How many of you that are living in winter have a generator somewhere? Because you are ready for when the power goes off. I know I don't. Anything happens, I'm cooked. I don't have a power bank, but that's for my phone. Not for the whole house. So there are certain services or certain things that we enjoy and we don't really appreciate it. And this is why I actually appreciate, like, running into non-Namibians. Because they tend to look at things, they tend to point out things that have been there all the time. But that's when you realize that, okay, you know what, you have been looking at these things, but you never really took a time to think of it in a ways that will make you or more like appreciate it if it's done in a, correctly, or question it if it's done incorrectly. It's fascinating. So, now, the African Union, when they met for their 39th ordinary session in February in Addis Ababa, one of the things that they discussed was the Luanda Declaration on Financing Africa's Infrastructure Development. Now, this was just more like a report, basically, that was presented at the 39th ordinary session. But a large chunk of the discussion in relation to that led to this, decisions. It's a declaration. They were there to declare that we have to up our game, especially in terms of financing. This is something that you see pretty much all throughout the document, which is, it's a 213-page document. Full of declarations, decisions, and something else. Declarations and decisions and what now? Luanda declarations. Declarations, decisions, and something else. That's on the first page. And I'm, almost 200 pages in. So, While going through the Luanda Declaration, or more like a presentation that was done at the 39th session at the beginning of this year, it sort of like led me down a rabbit hole, and that rabbit hole is one that I'm going to drag you along with me for the next 2 hours and 33 minutes. For the next 2 hours and actually it's 36 minutes. 2 hours So let's start with the this event took place between the from the 28th to the 31st of October 2025. So last year. So they were just looking at the financing and infrastructure, and they just said a lot of things that just made me go, okay, right. Now, moving on now. But, well, I brought it here, so may as well just go through it together. There are certain things that are very apparent when it comes to these things. Once if you have read this type of documents long enough, you realize that from the moment that you find a document, even if you find one that comes out next year, you are certain you'll find a lot of correlation between the 2025 infrastructure development discussion, 2026 infrastructure development discussion. And like I pointed out, in terms of connecting African roads, the Trans-Africa Highway projects goes back to 1971. Now, in that rabbit hole, led me to one article that was written by a Kenyan businessman, Mark Anthony Johnson, in the Habari Network. And I'm really gonna try my best not to, turn the whole thing into a frying pan, because the whole article is basically just one giant frying pan. Bro is not pulling his punches, but I'll be there in a few. So, this is something that's very fascinating, because, they came up with the Trans-Africa Highway System was dormant for a while, that it was just resuscitated in terms of implementation back in 2007. So that's when it was given CPR, and then African leaders were like, all right, now, okay, the wind of change blew, and we now have our different degrees of independence, because a bunch of countries are still mired in civil wars. So so we have got to start visiting one another. Plus, we are Africa. Ubuntu is our thing. Now, Ubuntu is our interconnectedness. Now, interconnectedness means we have to visit each other, a.k.a. we have to travel to each other's country. I know. There's a lot of anti-immigration going on in a lot of countries. South Africa. Now, but the thing is, that spirit of Ubuntu, as you can imagine, brought African leaders together back in 2007. Where was I? Primary. Anyway, they brought African leaders together, and they had to give the Trans-Africa Highway project a CPR in terms of implementation, that we have to visit each other. Now, to visit each other or to trade with each other as a continent, we need to connect each other. We need connections. These are literal road connections, not the political ones. They already have those ones. They were formed during the liberation struggles. Like, of course they were connected, which is why the whole colonial project on the African continent sort of dissipated significantly over a very short period of time. Just look up, Operation Legacy, and then you'll find out just how much pressure the British were, how much pressure they were in with regards to destroying all the colonial evidence that they had. But coming back, to 2007, African leaders comes together in 2007 and agreed to connect Africa. And they come up with, the beginning part of it was a 9-part plan, more like 9-part connections of road networks. And then it was extended to 10. My favorite one was, as we speak, if things worked out in terms of implementation, fast enough to basically see the project through, because as we speak, it's about 55% well complete. And I think that even those numbers are too extreme. I'm saying that's too extreme because it turns out there's supposed to be a road that is supposed to connect Cape Town, Windhoek, and Tripoli, Libya. Tripoli, Libya. after what your first American black president, the idiot that you're always celebrating about, Obama basically coordinated a whole, you know, strike and bombed the Libya to smithereens. And you had a bunch of African leaders that were thinking, you know, you know what's the most painful thing about being an African country and a non-African country or military coalition invades an African country and y'all are just sitting there going, well, what can we do? It's like, you know, it's like having a bunch of your gym bros that you go clubbing with and then you get beat up and they're just there looking at you being panel beaten. That's basically what happened to Libya. When Libya was being panel beaten in 2011, I think a bunch of African leaders forgot that there was a trans Africa, and most of it was an air raid, more like it was just a bombing campaign, and bombing campaigns destroy a large chunk of infrastructure, roads among them. So that means the invasion of Libya in 2011 basically disrupted the Trans-Africa Highway project. As we speak, there's supposed to be a road connecting Cape Town, Windhoek, and Tripoli. Tripoli, Libya, Tripoli. Okay, Google Maps, how far am I from Tripoli, Libya? Because that's just one thing I forgot to check. Okay, Libya. Oh, no. Really? Can't spell Tripoli? Yeah, Libya. Oh, no. Hoo-hoo. You know, this road is supposed to be, hang on a second. Holy cow. It's 9,123 kilometer of dirt road that will just drive you all the way to Tripoli, Libya. Now, that is actually the longest. That's if you are going through, Angola and Congo Brazzaville, and you are going through, then you go through Nigeria, then you go through Niger, and we all know what's happening in Niger right now. It's just not one place you want to drive through, at least not right now. That's path number one, and then it takes you through Algeria. Then you are in Tripoli, Libya. Now, that will take you 5 days and 18 hours. Now, that's one that drives, in one way or another, you are going to have to drive through DRC. Now, you either have to drive for 5 hours by going through DRC and, using the Nigeria and Niger, route, or you have to take the one for 5 days and 18 hours. That one, it takes you through Zambia and through Tanzania. And okay, now at least you are avoiding M23 on this one. Actually, I'll just take that one because you have Uganda. Yeah, Uganda is fine. Apart from the whole set is sending, Ugandan military to the Gaza Strip thing. I don't know who thought of that, but seriously, this is the thing. And you have South Sudan, and you have Sudan. From the look of things, we managed to avoid M23, but then we ran into the Rapid Support Force. So there is no way of getting to Tripoli right now, at least not by road. Because it's either you are running through M23 by going through DRC, and even if you avoid M23, you risk running into Boko Haram in northern Nigeria. Or you just run into a country under questionable leadership right now, and that's Niger. And Algeria. have a cooler because you're literally driving through the Sahara Desert, whatever road you take. Now, I would actually advise taking the Nigeria road, because if you take the, taking the West African route, because if you take the East African one, everything is going to be so nice through Zambia, through Uganda, through Tanzania, through the point of correction. In South Sudan, things are going to get a little chilly. By the time that you get to Sudan and the rapid support force and things are not going very well at this point. And then you get to Libya, even worse. Next thing you know, you are in one of those videos, in Morocco, swimming your way to that Spanish enclave. So, I just wanted to breathe. I didn't want to, go for a break, at least not yet. So the Trans-Africa Highway Project, which I believe was interrupted by yours truly, constitutional lawyer / Nobel Peace Prize winner, and that's Obama. Here's the thing. Five things you need to know, and that's the African Union, not me. Five things you need to know about Luanda Declaration on Financing Africa's Infrastructure Development. When SADC met this year in South Africa to have this discussion of infrastructure development, especially in relation to transport infrastructure, one lady was cooking with gas. Bekele Thomas, so I kept pointing out, much of the infrastructure we're building is tailored for the very same thing we are trying to avoid, which is shipping natural resources raw. Because we only have these roads, building a road from a mine to the port is not infrastructure development. I was like, my lady, please, more volume. Building a road or a railway station that's running from a mine to the port is not infrastructure development. That's to be fair, it's infrastructure development, but not your infrastructure. It's someone else's infrastructure, someone else, aka wherever that raw natural resources is being shipped to. That's whose infrastructure you're developing, not yours. Technically, it's infrastructure development, just not your infrastructure. So you're gonna have to be specific here. Now, there's just one problem. The way infrastructure, the way any type of development works, or more like the way any type, not development, sorry, the way any type of investment works, and you don't have to be an economist to, to figure this out, is what's being invested in is going to first have to work to the individual pouring in the money. And there is one part I almost left out before diving into that. And that part is we are at war, just not one-way bombs are exploding. Actually, we are not at war. Big powers, especially China and the U.S., are at war. And they are fighting over everything. Who gets to be whose friend? They're fighting over that. They are not fighting with bombs. No, this is a fight with a pen and paper, aka diplomatic or economic or any type of agreements being signed by a lot of, developing countries. And, one thing I like about the whole thing? We got to take advantage of the whole thing. When the Chinese shows up, we're like, Namibia is a friend to all and an enemy to none. So whatever issues you have with these guys with the biggest embassy here, we don't care. We just want to trade. If you're okay with that, we're good. And when the American shows up, we tell them, you know what? Whatever tariff issues you have with the Chinese, you leave it outside there. This is you and I. Whatever you guys have an issue there, we are trading with them. They are your enemy, but not ours. And one thing I like about, the tension between China and the US is that it shows just how smart real people are, you know, rich people are. Why? It's because as much as the US and China throw mud at each other all the time, they trade with each other in the very same way that they insult each other. In other words, they would just go like, they would just go cursing at each other, and they're like, okay, now, so what are you buying? So I'll sell you this, and then, you know, I'll also need that too. Okay, now, are we done? All right, did you get your money? Yeah. Did you get yours? Yeah. Now, back to insulting. Now, the problem with that is a lot of broke people in both countries hate each other to the point where they would not be in business if they were put in the same room. But the financial giants in both countries that are running these two giant economies, they are trading insult on one side, and they are trading products and services and technology and goods on one side. And then somewhere in the middle here with espionage, they are both stealing each other's stuff. And everyone actually knows. Now, I think one thing to learn from that is, you can still fight and help each other all at the same time. You don't have to fight and kill each other. You can still fight. That's one thing I admire about the relationship. It's like they have this love-hate relationship. Beijing said this about Trump. Washington said this about Xi. China traded this much of products to the US. The US traded this much of products to China. I'm like, do you guys hate each other or not? It took me a while before I realized, you are not supposed to murder each other, because as much as you hate each other, you both know damn well you need each other. If China was to disappear right now, as a country, do you have an idea what that will do to the global economy, including the US economy? A lot of damage. Now, if the US was to disappear today, the whole country, I would just go with the making the president disappear, but that's beside the point. The whole country disappear. Can you imagine what that will do to the to the global economy, including the Chinese economy? So these two economic powerhouse of this planet, they know that as much as they trade insult, through mainstream media for the most part, or social media, whatever, insult they are trading in terms of, in the political sphere, in the economic sphere of things, they know, both of them, and now, because if a comedian in Southern Africa knows it, they know they need each other. Otherwise, their economies wouldn't survive. So, I think for those of you that go with the mentality of "I was born in this party and I will die in this party," I think we could learn a thing or two from that. You belong to IPC, I belong to RDP. We'll be fighting during a rally, but when we meet at a single quarter, it's just laughing and kapana. We only live once. We're not going to spend the whole time hating each other. Ah, yeah, get out of here. But what we do is actually the opposite of what I think, of what I have observed the US and China are doing. They know when to fight. And they know when they need each other. And that's when they're trading. So in a way, they're behaving like some of those people in a relationship that you give advice. You woke up with a blue eye. This is the fifth time you're coming to my house with a blue eye. Why can't you just leave here? Like, but the thing is, there's this thing about this girl. I just can't put my finger on her. Like, she makes me, you just don't advise, homeboy. Don't advise. And actually tell him to stop explaining. When someone shows up to my place with a blue eye for the fifth time, and I tell them to get out of that relationship, and there is a paragraph of an explanation, I know it's 90% chances something that have to do with the bedroom. And I don't want to hear more about that. I don't have money for therapy. So I just tell them, actually, you do you. And then I start, you know, putting money aside for a suit, you know, and whichever comes, wedding or funeral, at least I'm ready. So, the part that I almost forgot about, you know, about this whole discussion is when we are talking about, governance, there's one piece I think we more often leave out, and that is the fall of the Soviet Union in the fall of the Soviet Union and Union in 1990. If you look at African liberation struggle movement, the Soviet Unions played a very significant role in you know, in fighting with Africans to achieve their independence. But one thing that you see is that fast forward, especially after the fall of the Soviet Union, I think a lot of African leaders now had an identity issue, more like with regards to picking what type of leadership structure are we, you know, are we going with? Are we going full cutthroat Western capitalism, or are we going socialism, or whatever it is that leadership structure, more like economic or political structure that was used by the Soviet Union? Which one are we going with? And because, you know, you have to understand North and South Korea exist today because of the fight between communism and capitalism. Pretty much. Everything basically boils, you know, basically boils down to that. You have North and South Vietnam. There were a lot of, basically much of the wars that were fought were just proxy wars between the Soviets and the U.S. One was like, you know what, you have to take my idea of political and economic ideology. And the other was saying, no, you have to take mine. Now, because come fast forward 1989, 1990, the Soviet Union falls. And then now, well, capitalism reigns supreme. Now, at this point, which basically meant if you wanted to survive in the new world where the Soviet Union did not exist anymore, you had to side with the guy that, you know, won the fight. And then everyone's like, okay, you know what, guys, plus I mean, Russia had a tough couple of years after the fall of the Soviet Union. I mean, economically it was just Jesus, it was a catastrophe 101. So that means because look, it took me a while to sort of like try to understand why is that every time that I read African liberation struggle movements, there's a lot of Soviet reference in terms of how they were helping, not just providing them with hardware, but also fighting with them side by side. I mean, Cubans were in Angola. And until I realized, okay, you know what? Maybe this has something to do with the fall of the Soviet Union. Now the very interesting scenario to paint now in my head after that point of view is that how would this world look like if, take for example, fast forward to 1990, instead of the Soviet Union falling, capitalism fell. We would be having a whole different point of view on discussion. I don't know if there are any one of us who would be having this whole discussion about, you know what, three branches of government and this, and yeah, there are three branches of government, but the Soviet way of doing things was somewhat wildly different from the Western way of doing things. Even though in the beginning it really worked for the West, and then they went full cutthroat capitalism, which is why I referenced the video of that American lady that flew to India and found out that the same medication that is bought in her country for $1,000 cost about $3 of the same currency halfway across the world. Now that's not, that's cutthroat capitalism. That's for profit on a whole, on steroid. For profit pro max. So it's just a picture that I thought would be interesting to paint out. I mean, would have been interesting to sort of like, look at the rearrangement that would have taken place after the fall of the Soviet Union. I mean, if the Soviet Union, you know, didn't fall, we'd be looking at a whole different world. But it's kind of difficult to picture now how it would have turned out because, well, the Soviet Union fell. Now, I think after the fall of the Soviet Union, you have a lot of African countries that, you know, actually had to look at the what remained of the Soviet Union. Now you are, now it's not the Soviet Union anymore. It's just Russia. Now, I can imagine there are a lot of Africans that just looked at, at Russia and went like, look, I understand you guys helped us with our independence and all, but well, the big guy on the block now is this guy who doesn't seem to like you guys very much. So what we're going to do is, thank you very much for this whole, weapons supply and helping us with our independence, but we're going to, go full capitalism now, free market economy, all that, yeah. And then the whole world, basically, a lot of African countries that you would have expected to actually follow the Soviet Union, Russian way of leadership, except, like I pointed out earlier, Russia did not have a good time after the fall of the Soviet Union, not economically. It was that bad. And one thing that you also see is that even before the fall of the Soviet Union, you have countries like Burkina Faso, where you had Thomas Sankara. Thomas Sankara really wanted to take, really wanted to adopt the Soviet Union way of running things in his country, but Blaise Compaoré seemed to have a different point of view, and then through Blaise Compaoré and now the Western guys basically used his best friend to topple him, and then just pivot the whole country's economic and political structure from the Soviet way of doing things to the Western way of doing things, which is why the children that were sent to go and gain skills, all kinds of skills that were sent to by Thomas Sankara to Cuba, those children were not repatriated by Blaise Compaoré when he rose to power. He just left them to dry. It's one of those very sad chapter in the history of Burkina Faso, and in that very terrible power shift, I guess, not just from the Soviet way of doing things to the Western way of doing things, but from Thomas Sankara to Blaise Compaoré. And it wasn't until, when was that, 2-3 years ago, when he apologized to Thomas Sankara's wife for participating in the murder of his... There are no friends in politics. Don't fall for it. Because the way that these people backstab each other. Now, I actually think it's sort of like interesting when you look at it that for a lot of African countries, even though the Soviets helped them help them with arms and manpower to fight for their independence, after they achieved that independence, they sided with the very adversary the Soviets helped them fight. That's why how I realized, okay, there's a lot of irony here. So I just did a little bit of digging and found out, I think a lot of these guys just flew just this direction because the Soviet Union fell, which is makes a lot of sense, it turns out, in the world of politics and in the world of power. Now, that Burkina Faso example that I used is still happening to this day. Only instead of the West and Soviet Union, it's the West versus China. And don't take my word for it. Let's go to one of my favorite documents. That's the Lobito Corridor. Un momento, s'il vous plaît. Yeah, that's the Lobito Corridor Investment Promotion Authority. Now, this is from 2024. This is the very same document. Okay, un momento. Seem to have accidentally. Yeah. This is what it's pointing out. When I say that they says what happened between the sort of like proxy military and economic wars that were fought by the by the US and the Soviet Union before a lot of African countries achieved their independence. That is somewhat the war that is taking place between the West, especially the US and China right now. Only that war is not actually being fought with bombs. It's mostly economic. And one example that's being used here, and I totally agree with these guys, and you're allowed to disagree. We live in a democratic country. But, you know, I'm just going to share it with you. Actually, let's do that on the other side of the break. I feel like I've been talking for a while. And did I point out I have 5 sisters? Actually, 6, yeah. So let's just say I was trained well.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipuranengelo wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
And welcome back. So let's continue now, shall we? Welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, Eagle FM, blah, blah, blah. Moving on. Now, this is opposing points of view on how things should be done. By big countries like China and the US. I decided to basically draw a correlation between what was happening between the Soviet Union and the US to what's happening between China, and the US right now. And it turns out I'm not the only one that had that point of view. The Lobito Corridor Investment Promotion Authority, I would assume they know what they're talking about, pointed out the following. So let's look at it now, shall we? Dueling, as in duel, as in fencing or sword fight, some type of dueling. Dueling rail project hints at intensifying contest for Africa's critical minerals. which is why I totally agree with Bekele Thomas' point of view that building a road or a railway from a mine to the port is not infrastructure development for Africa. It's just a third road, more like efficient transport kind of you while doing the exact same thing that we are trying to avoid, aka shipping raw natural resources out of the continent. Now, the S&P Global Insights, that's like the S&P 500, you know, like the big multinational conglomerates, basically. S&P Global Insight article highlights the intensifying global competition for control over the minerals-rich Africa's copper belt, spanning Zambia and the Democratic Republic of Congo. But commercial break.
Okay, my turn.
Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. Enjoy responsibly. Now, back to the, to my correlation between Soviet Union and the U.S. and China, Soviet Union and the U.S. back then, and China and the U.S. today. This S&P Global Insight, article highlights the intensifying global competition for control over the mineral-rich African copper belt, spanning Zambia and the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC. On one side, the Lobito Corridor has received a commitment of over $1 billion from private companies, companies supported in part by the consortium backed by the U.S. And the European Union. This ambitious project aims to link the northern region of Zambia and southern DRC directly to Angola's port of Lobito, optimizing the export of essential minerals like copper and cobalt. Now, that's why I just, decided to put a pause when I was going through this. Then I asked myself, okay, why is there a competition here? And by the way, the competition is, a lot of us just know about the Lobito Corridor Group that's being funded by the West. I think the United States and the EU, the Lobito Corridor Group, and it's literally going west. It starts from Zambia and it goes through DRC, through Angola to the port of Lobito. That's the Lobito Corridor Group. And it's a railway project. It's a railway project. Heavily extractive by design, because it all depends on who is financing it. But on one side, you have also, you have an opposing project, like a competitor to the Lobito Corridor Group that is going in the opposite direction, and it's literally going east. And the railway project that's going west is being financed by the West, and the railway that is going east is being financed by the East. You see, it's a piece of infrastructure. It's a railway tracks, basically. And so you have the Lobito Corridor Group that's going, with their railway project that is going, that's literally going west. And then you have the Tazara Railway that is literally going east, financed, spearheaded by China. So, one thing that you see here is that, I agree with the Lobito investment guys here. These are two railways that are just showing a very clear picture that there is an economic proxy war happening in Southern Africa, which is fascinating. But, you know, they didn't stop there. They went, then they went on to point out that, on the other side, China is concentrated, it's concentrating its efforts on revitalizing the Tazara Railway, an eastern route leading to Tanzania, Dar es Salaam. Now, once renovated, the renovated Tazara aims to restore its original capacity of 5 million metric tons of cargo per year. Now, both the railways are projected to, you know, once completed, they are projected to have the capacity of about, you know, of carrying about a five, you know, is it a five? I mean, it's 4.98 million metric tons for the Lobito corridor, and 5 million metric tons. 4.9 round that to the nearest whole number, so you have 5 million, 5 million metric tons for both railways. Now, just for the fun of it, I decided to ask myself one question. Why is this competition happening? And I decided to look into something I thought was fun. Data centers. It turns out there are two main differences, or there are two main categories of data centers. You have category number one of basically type of, you know, one that feeds tech that doesn't use AI. You have category number two, one that feeds tech that uses AI. The thing is, AI data centers are not just, you know, demanding in terms of water and energy, but, you know, just data centers themselves. An AI data center on average requires about 50,000 tons. 50,000 tons of copper. That's one data center. You need about 50,000 tons of copper. And the US is working on 80-something, about 84 data centers. I don't know how many of them are AI data centers. But the thing is, you have, data centers are basically being spread across the world. Which means the more technology advanced, as we are seeing, the more AI is being incorporated in pretty much everything, as we are seeing, the more data centers are going to be needed. And therefore, the more copper you need. That's why Zambia is a very smoking hot chick right now. David?
Yes, good afternoon, how are you?
Oh, yeah.
No, it's connected.
Yeah?
Yeah, now I can hear.
Yeah, I hear the conversation. It's an interesting conversation looking at the infrastructure, looking at who is benefiting from this infrastructure.
Yeah.
And also what is going to leave us with, especially as African, to say when somebody is building a road to your house,
yeah,
is it necessary to upgrade you or to take things from you? And also where do we find the balance?
Yeah.
And what is our input when it comes to these developmental partners? I do not have a problem with developmental partners. I only have a problem when they are not getting the ideas, mm-hmm, and views of other developmental partners, including us. You mentioned a very important, it's not even a hot topic anymore. It has been debated, especially when you look at Africa trade, mm-hmm, infrastructure. When you look at the Lobito Corridor from its initial establishment, who were the main funders of Lobito Corridor? How many billions of dollars are still spent to expand it? Then the question, is it really to develop Africa or is it really to take things out? Because if
you
don't
give you 5 million for free,
if you don't ask those difficult questions, yeah, and it's not only to Africa trade infrastructure, look at where the money is being put. Mm-hmm. It's not only Africa trade infrastructure, but you have to go beyond that. Because nobody give you things for free, but the conversation itself, especially looking at Africa being a better ground, for example, of natural resources. You mentioned Zambia being you gave an example of Zambia,
like a smoking hot chick in town.
Yeah,
that everyone wants because, well, okay, I'll explain the rest on Sunday.
Yeah, but let's see to say what will be the impact of that.
Yeah.
Who is going to benefit from that? And also, in a long term, how are we going to finance our own infrastructure? Because one thing that we should go into when we discuss these things to say, when you mention copper,
yeah,
everything that we are using, most of them are coming from Africa. They just come as materials to be used by other professionals again to develop our institutions. You look at Windhoek, look at those buildings. Ask yourself one question: how many of these materials are from Africa, but how many of them were finished products after they were processed outside?
Yeah.
And you are also going to buy them so that you can, provide opportunities to other people that you were not supposed to provide to. But yeah, let's look at it. Let's look at is it really modernization or other fancy way of continuation of exploitation and colonialism in another form? Or we are just continuing in a different chain. It's only that this one is now gold. Yeah, we need to ask those questions. Yeah.
So the handcuffs are made out of gold.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going, oh, well, at least they're made out of gold.
Mm-hmm.
Look. My reference to a proxy economic economic big player power struggle is that this is the same thing that we basically saw in Venezuela. This is the same thing that we saw the Trump administration, especially I think it was this Miller guy. Especially at the beginning of this year, they brought up, they started bringing up the whole idea of the Monroe Doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we heard that a lot coming out of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at it, it was more about China's influence in South America.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they didn't like that.
Yeah.
So one thing that you see again is that what happened to Venezuela in February was that in January?
It was just 4 days after New Year. Week was not a good week.
Good week.
I can remember it.
So that can be seen to some degree as one of those like rivalry. Yeah, rivalry between between the U.S. and China, and this is a very interesting. It's more of an economic competition.
Yeah, look, you brought it lightly. It's also a question that I've asked at one of the launch of the book on constitutionalism in Africa continental free trade area. Mm. One of the questions that I ask is, what is delaying first and full implementation of Africa continental free trade area, especially looking at the external factors? A battleground, these things, you see them, even when you go today at oil and gas conference, you have all the investors there, but you can see on faces, not to judge anybody, you see these players, they are also looking at how they can take each other down, not in a bad way, but business wise. When you listen, I like listening to the he's the president of EU, the lady, when she comes to Africa, when she speaks at the African Union and that engagement with EU, one of the things that she always does is the aspect of EU, we do this, we are the second to China. We are the first, apart from China. We are what from China.
So it's a comparison.
No, it's comparison. Just to see that we bring a lot of money. Look at the Robito Corridor. She always said, look at Robito Corridor. We are also trying to expand agricultural project in, I think you were supposed to play that speech when she was in Angola with the whole delegation, AU-EU summit after the G20.
Yeah.
So we are better than this one. We are the second to China. Apart from China, EU brought this. And you see it to say, you are compared to China. But China is a very interesting guy. They do not, They don't talk. No, they don't talk, but they will compete with you, yeah, whether you like it or not. And they are
very good. They are not very good on speech.
Yeah.
But when you are throwing speech and something.
Yeah.
They'll just put something on paper, like, you know, just go ahead and implement that.
Yeah, just go ahead. No, it's a battleground, and it's interesting also to say. It also gives us an opportunity of choice, ne?
Yeah.
And also,
yeah, definitely.
Opportunity of choice, and also where to direct the conversation, unless we are not seeing it, because we cannot lose them all.
Yeah.
And when you have a competition, you have choices. But the question really that we need to ask is that when money comes to Africa, do you know, when you look at the numbers,
yeah,
I'm always fascinated by numbers. When you look at the numbers of investment, they are very strategic investment. Are we receiving them a strategic investment on our side? To others, they are very strategic investment. Mm-hmm. If you listen to all the speeches of prominent people today at the oil and gas conference,
yeah,
it's almost the same thing. There are resources in Africa. The investors comes. We know exactly that we need their money. What we do not know is how do we find the balance. That's why we are always talking to say we need to add value. We need to do this. Ask yourself a question to say, yes, it's true. We need to add value.
Yeah.
But what stop you to start adding value to what you already have? But the interesting part is also that when you look at Robito Corridor, is more beneficial to EU than to Africa. But we cannot say Robito Corridor is not benefiting Africa. That's not what we are saying. But the strategic mission of it,
mm-hmm,
is to make it easy to export. Because if you have to put billions of euros in Africa, what's stopping you to invest in a refinery in Africa? Dangote did his own thing. He was faced with a lot of criticism and all these things, but at the end of the day,
yeah,
it's a matter of asking to say, what can we do as Africans to move forward? I don't have a problem with anybody who is expanding the infrastructure of Africa. I only have a problem when the infrastructure is not serving the people of Africa. And maybe the other thing that we should also look at, apart from infrastructure, let's not move away from measuring the progress that has been made, or the progress that need to be made, especially when it comes to human development.
Yeah.
No matter how much you spend on expansion of Robito Corridor, on expansion of connectivity of roads, there is always a question that you should ask yourself to say, are you changing the lives of the people? That's a conversation that we should also not let it die. If you are in a green hydrogen project, look at the people. Is that being able to save the people? Look at oil and gas. Apart from numbers, apart from infrastructures, is going to serve the people. But transportation is good, but the transportation can also be dangerous, because it made us lazy. People build the railways. People build, the most advanced infrastructure in Africa are either ports or railways.
That's the thing.
Yeah, those are the most advanced infrastructure. But ask yourself a question, are they advanced for the good of the African people? Yes, they are advanced for the good of African people. But to what extent? On the other hand, it made it easy for a long time. People have been exploiting raw material. Even during colonialism, the discussion had been, it started already to say, no man, these people are exploiting our raw materials. They are doing this and doing this. But they made sure that the port transportation is made smooth, so that industries can be built in Europe, in the US, and other part of the world.
There's one guy.
Mm.
I'm not sure if that guy is Ghanaian or Indian, but he really asked a question that got me thinking about. If you look at after the Second World War,
mm,
Europe went on a reconstruction. Now, the U.S. helped them with the, you know, the U.S. helped them with a lot of financing in terms of reconstruction. Now, the thing is, look, development was approached very widely different because, I mean, which is totally understandable because much of Africa was still under colonialism. Which is why you see that even in the, you know, fast forward to the 1960s and 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, all the way through to the 90s where you see Namibia and South Africa achieving their own independence. One thing that you see is that the solution of, the idea of development and reconstruction, building an economy from a ground up after it's been reduced to trouble by war. The approach to Europe was financing for infrastructure development, build industries, skills and everything. But when it came to developing Africa, it's foreign aid after foreign aid after foreign aid. Like, really? So, you have one that was empowered to build their own industries. And you have one that was basically spoon-fed and not just spoon-feeding. Because, one of the, one of the very interesting debate with regards to foreign aid out there that you'll find, all you just have to do is, it's just a simple Google search is that, for most foreign aids, about 20 to 30% of the money do not leave donor country.
Look,
if you look at it, it's basically a fancy way of creating employment. Look, for your country, David, your country needs help. And I claim to send help to your country. And then I take $30 billion of my taxpayers' money. And then find a company. I'm donating. I want to donate shoes to your country. I want to donate shoes to your country. So now what I will do is I will take take $30 million of my taxpayers' money and then give that money to Shilongo Leather to manufacture the shoes. And then give the those shoes to Silas Ndapuka to transport the shoes. How much am I donating to you?
No, I hear you. No, it's a deep question.
Look, it's a creative way of creating employment.
It's a creative way. And also ask yourself a question to say, you mentioned a very interesting thing about reconstruction of Europe. Do you know that the formation of World Bank, its initial aim is Bank of Reconstruction. It was for that purpose that you have mentioned, to say the World Bank itself, now it's expanded. But look at what happened from 1944, 1945 toward the end of the Second World War. Ask any person to say, why was World Bank was created? It was a Bank of Reconstruction. Because U.S. realized to say, it's very difficult to do business anymore. You need somebody who you need to do business with. That's why we need to help these guys to build their economy. But was that gesture extended to Africa?
No.
No, it was not extended.
Actually,
because just you need,
from 1940s,
yeah.
They were just basically still extracting from Africa to develop Europe.
You need more money to develop Europe, to bring it to the standard of where it was, so that you can continue trading. But with Africa, you continue with exploitation. People have to fight for freedom, and you don't want to go to that discussion. But what is interesting is also that the international or developmental economists, there are also things that they did not do well when it comes to advising of African governments, because developmental economists, most of them, when they go and study in the Western world or even in the Eastern part of the world, when they come here, their projects are not creative. They are not creative. They don't have new theories.
They are copy and paste.
Yeah, it's copy and paste. They become, some are really good writers, but they become good writers with ideologies that are not really being able to assist us. You look at, we have brilliant economists in Namibia. We have best economists, actually. Our economists are working at various international institutions, but why are they finding it very difficult to move just a domestic economy, with 2% growth? When you ask that question, no, it's not their whole responsibility, but they can contribute in creating of plans. You realize to say, there are things that we need to expand to say the trajectory of development. How should development move? What is a developmental plan, and how should it move? Does a developmental plan need to make sure that it has 80% of external fundings?
Yeah.
Is a developmental plan going to be on hopes? If we speak about infrastructure, ask yourself this question. We are still asking now to say we are 1 month before the midterm budget review. Then we call it a year. Then what is the standard of Sem Nujoma Stadium? Why is it so difficult for us to not build, upgrade an infrastructure? You are just upgrading an infrastructure. Why is it so difficult for us to do that? And this is our own infrastructure. And how long is it going to take us to build a refinery if we have to do it on our own? You are just upgrading. You are just painting something which is already standing. Or you are just ending. But we are still here. Do you know that that plane was there the second... When did the rehabilitation started taking place? The second term of Tate Geingob. Mm-hmm. The Minister of Youth was determined to say, no, upgrading... These are the plans consulted here and there, but until now, and it worries you to say self-driven development, we still do not know that. Yeah. We still need somebody from outside. And that is very dangerous because you are going to lose a lot of money in doing so. Otherwise, we'll let it in the hands of God, like what you have said in that aspect. But the other thing which I also wanted to say is that you can't do anything without infrastructure.
No.
Nope. And your infrastructure must not make somebody from outside too happy. Your infrastructure must first answer to the basics.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll be shocked to look at... do we have something like a 6-star hotel or just a 5-star? just to give an example,
yeah.
You can go to the most... poorest country in Africa. Then you look at their luxurious place.
Mm-hmm.
When tourists go to those countries and make documentaries, and they confuse also children who are in some part of the world, they think Africa is still a jungle.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to sleep in the most beautiful, luxurious, hotels within the poorest countries. But that infrastructure is answering first to somebody from outside, but they are not really answering to the people that are there. Go to Guinea, look at Senegal, look at Mali, look at even DRC. There are people who are very happy to be in Democratic Republic of Congo because of some infrastructure.
Yeah.
But those infrastructure are strategically funded for just somebody to relax and, you come and do your thing. You go there, you relax, and you go find where the mines are. Then you go back to your country. If somebody say we have 20 billion, we want to build something in Africa, the first question we should ask ourselves is that what is in for us?
David, it's a very simple business principle.
Yeah.
You don't have to be an economist to know that.
Mm.
Investment and donation are two different things.
Yeah.
Yeah. We use this term all the time, foreign direct investor. When an investor is coming to pour money in your country, that money they are pouring in, at an agreed period of time, they want to get all that money back plus interest. Now, when we start looking at, when we understand the word investor like that, we'll stop, we'll actually be very careful of how we run around the world and more like having all this campaign of, we're attracting investors. They are not donors. They are not donors. They are investors. At the end of the day, plus, you can't blame them. It's their money.
And you're
asking them to risk investing their money, hard end or evil end, whichever. It's their money.
Yeah.
In your economy.
Hmm.
So they will want to get it back. because of that.
No, they will get it back.
they will get it back.
Yeah, they will get it back because an investor has a financial risk analyst or financial investment risk analyst, something like that.
Yeah.
You look at the risk involved before you do a transaction.
Yeah.
You look at the risk involved before you send your people on the ground.
Yeah.
You look at the risks that are involved before you build an infrastructure. When Total, Shells, they are pumping a lot of money in oil and gas industry, it's not on a wishful thinking.
Yeah.
Things are already there,
yeah,
because they are done.
They are not going, you know what?
They are not guessing.
Because we have so much money or because we love your country so much.
Yeah.
We just bomb. No.
No. These guys calculate very well. They have done their risk analysis.
They have an army of accounts, of accountants.
Accountants.
Or financial experts who basically do all that.
Best lawyers, best planners. Yeah. And they make sure that they minimize the risk. Even if they lose at some point, they will get their money.
Yeah.
Now, you have somebody who already done with a deal. Okay, let's look at the short commercial break.
You know, there's something about opening a Chafo Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Chafo Lager and start the conversation. Chafo Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today.
Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
Welcome back. 29 minutes left to the hour of 6. You're still listening to Home Run with Helmut and David for today. And, of course, we're here until the hour of 7. So, David, you're still saying?
Yeah, I was talking about risk before investment, strategizing before moving. They make sure that that part is well handled. You mentioned something offline, which I think I should put it on air, which is quite valuable to look at, to be fair, in a business that we are entering into. Because when you are talking about investors are business people. It's just a fancy, fancy way to say people are coming to do business with us.
Yeah.
And when they're coming to do business with us, we want partnership.
Yeah.
But they are already ahead of us in terms of their technical skills, their financial capacity, and their experience. You are already they are already leading 5-0. And you must make sure that you don't have an own goal. because by the start by the start of the game, the investors are already leading 5-0. Yeah, 5-0. And you make sure that you play so well that maybe you are going to get them at an extra time, or maybe it's not going to be a draw, but from there you are also learning. But just to compare it at the beginning, to say they are already leading in terms of those things which I have mentioned. But one thing which I wanted to bring about is the aspect of percentage. You know, one thing I also started realizing is that when you start engaging into this conversation, you are learning every day, and you start seeing. you are learning every day, and you start seeing that you start seeing that sometimes when we may say you want a percentage of a certain amount, but the question is that how much you have put there, how much do you have? The governor of Bank of Namibia mentioned a very important thing to say. Guys, this investment is bigger than our GDP. Somebody is it's like and it is not to downgrade anybody. If the investment is bigger than your GDP, it's already showing who is, not to say who is the boss, who is stronger there. Because if the investment is bigger than your GDP, is bigger than your budget, yes, we have resources. Those are the things that we have. But when somebody put an investment that is bigger than your GDP, you must really look at it to say, I need to be very careful. They are going to benefit, yes, but how should I get out of this?
Yeah.
At least with something that I can look at, because if it's not even FNB, just for example, if RMB is entering into a business agreement with David, who only has a tuck shop in a foyer of Havana,
yeah.
David must make sure that he is responsible and he's always on time when he's entering into the agreement with this institution, and must understand that you must progress to catch up. Because one thing that we need to do, either is trade investment, either is investment in oil and gas, we must read history. And history is the best thing that can teach you everything that's happening currently now. Just read history. Read history, how the business has been operating, how you should not become... having own goals. Like a good example, look at DRC. No, they are shooting in their own net. You look at Nigeria. Nigeria is upgrading their game now. Look at Sudan. look at Sudan, and many other examples that you can give. But you also have a history which is better to say, how did these guys in the in the Arabic desert, the guys, the Oman, them, the Saudis.
Yeah.
How come the guys who were just riding camels in a desert become rich, very powerful, and influential? What did they do right? Maybe we should get that history book also to say, what did they do right?
You know what? Middle Eastern countries even have natural resources. My example is always countries like Japan, South Korea, and you have Japan, South Korea, Singapore.
Mm.
They don't have the natural resources we have, but they have reached this level of economic growth that now just picture them with the resources we have.
No, imagine if they had the resources that we have.
Not many
now.
Resources, just one of the resources you have. If they had that,
no, my brother, there will be superpower in terms of economic power, and they will not get them. It's quite a very critical question that you ask, to say if they can do that
without,
from a long distance. What if they were part of it? What if China had uranium like we have? Just ask yourself that question. What if Singapore had cobalt?
Oof.
Like what the DRC have? What if just one of the resources in Africa,
and
such as copper?
And the funny thing is, these are the countries that can almost fit in your pocket by landmass. Yeah, but they have just acquired this level of economic advancement that will just get you asking yourself one very simple question. Like, they achieved all that despite not having all the natural resources we have. Now, what level of economic advancement would they be on if they had all the natural resources we have? And the thing is, with all the natural resources we have, look, if I was God, I'll be slapping every African that will be praying for a miracle every day. Because you are kneeling on the miracles. You're asking me for miracles I already gave you.
I'll take it from you. I'll take it from you.
You know what? I'll just take it. Then I can give
to those. I think it's a good example, because asking help when you already have help is an insult to somebody who assisted you. We are sitting on top of miracles. And I don't want people to get me wrong. We spend most of our time in things that are not really assisting us.
Nah.
We spend most of our time praying for miracles, whatever church you go, that is what we do, asking for the future that we are sleeping on.
You are sleeping on gold and honey, and you are asking for the future. And that's why the question that I also ask myself is that, whatever happened with oil and gas, where am I going to be in 10 years in this aspect? In 20 years, are we going to have, am I going to be somebody who have stakes in oil and gas industry? Or am I going to be somebody who is just looking through the window? Where are we going to be in terms of uranium? Those are the questions we should ask ourselves to say. And there is this fear that is created to say you don't enter there. The discussion of stake in the oil are very, you know, they are very low. Discussion of stakes in the mines.
Yeah.
The discussion of fishing quota is only some few people that are doing it. And, they are also being played by bigger investors,
mm-hmm.
but they become successful with those, crumbs that we are getting from those, industry.
Yeah.
But, you know, let us also be positive. When you listen to African leaders, and I give credit to the recent summit of SADC, the 46 head of state and government summit,
mm-hmm.
when you listen to them, they are not only saying they are tired, they are also asking themselves, because if the disagreement started there, or if the self-assessment started there, I think we are going to get somewhere. They are also asking each other to say, guys, we have been speaking about this for many years, when are we starting? I gave that example to say, if the administrator is asking the real boss to say, when are you starting? It's not like you did not speak about this. And it's a very powerful speech to say, we must add value to our product. It's not like Africa did not speak about this. That is Magosi what he's saying. It's not like we don't know that if we do that, it is going to transform our economy, creation of jobs and all these things. The question is, the challenge is, when are we starting? That is one of the things that really touched me to say, when this conference comes to an end, for example, the one that we are having, how many people have started, or we are just waiting to say, investor chief, are they coming? So that we can benefit from that very chain. Are they coming?
Mm. Okay. First of all, look, Mr. Gatete of the Economic Commission of Africa,
mm-hmm.
and you have speaking at the African Union, I think about 2-3 weeks ago, and the same discussion now made a lot of points that resonated, with me in the very same way that anti-corruption heads, when they met in, South Africa,
mm-hmm.
for their annual meetings,
mm.
they talked about the very, they kept one point that they kept referring to in reference to what's one of those many things that Africa is not addressing, but they're basically elephants in the room, and this is illicit financing.
Mm.
Yeah, you have a lot of money that's leaving the continent illegally. And when you look at things like the Matlanga Commission, for example,
you have
Matlanga Commission, and you have the tuna bone scandal in Mozambique, and you have the IMF, I think still unfolding scandal in Senegal. These are the things that, these are the biggest problem. You have public funds. And one thing I liked about the SADC heads anti-corruption discussion was that, because these were representatives of the public sector, they didn't care about what the money that goes missing in the private sector.
Yeah,
yeah. They were just looking at the money that goes missing in the public sector, because that's that's what they meant to discuss.
Mm.
But one thing that they pointed out was that much of these funds, the biggest leak is coming from the public procurement. Now you have one big problem here. This is where my comedian part now comes in.
Yeah.
So, you're stealing money and then take it to Switzerland and then go to Switzerland to ask a Swiss investor to come invest in your economy.
Well, your money in Swiss bank.
Now, you do realize that investor is just going to a Swiss bank, borrow the money that you deposited, and then invest in your country.
Yeah, then you're with your money.
Now you owe him for investing in your infrastructure, in your infrastructure with your money.
Yeah.
And then you'll pay him with interest. Like, that level of stupidity needs to be studied by science. it's mind numbing because if we just pivoted and a finance, you know, internal financing is African Union's biggest thorn in the eye. We can sit and say, you know what, we have to build roads, we have to connect each other's countries, and then at the end of the day, the main question is, it's a very brilliant plan. It's an excellent one. But let's ask the question now. Where's the money going to come from? That's when you start seeing a lot of African, you know, leaders going, that about. Now, this decision document that came out of the 49th African Union session, one thing they pointed out was that, we endorse the 38 bankable projects presented at the LSF LFFS. That's the Luanda declaration.
Yeah.
And commend the commitment by the financial institutions and development partners to support the 13 PIDA. These are priority projects.
Yeah.
PIDA projects representing a combined investment mobilization of 18 billion as direct income of this 18 billion as direct income of this summit. But there's a part where they're talking about a certain percentage that must be dedicated by each country towards transport infrastructure investment. Now the thing is the reason why I want to reference that is that the African Union have the same thing about every country to end food security. Every country must commit this percentage of their GDP to agriculture, and then they meet to discuss health. The same discussion.
Yeah.
Every country must commit this level of their GDP in percentage to health.
Yeah.
And then they meet for education.
Mm-hmm.
The same discussion.
Yeah.
Every country must dedicate for the education. On this continent, every country must come, must dedicate 10% of their GDP. How many GDPs do you have? That's one. Number two. Number two. Why are we having this discussion now? Which is it's a whole interesting discussion. But look, the main stumbling block is we are very good at coming up with plans, and our plans on paper are just impeccable.
Yeah,
our main stumbling block is always, right now, where is the money going to come from?
You mentioned illicit financial flow.
Yeah,
I want us to get there to say we plan, then we end up. In short, we don't have enough money. But the problem is that the money that is being lost in the public sector in Africa, per year, if you put them together, you will not believe it. If you want to see that money is lost, either is illicit financial flow, either is corruption, petty cash money, look at what's happening. Just look at Namibia. What's happening with public or parliamentary committee on public accounts and many other committees, where people are running away, where people are running. How can somebody who does not have a certificate in finance, even online certificate in finance, you are running millions of dollars? Who is benefiting from that? And how come? You know, an institution or a local authority that have a CEO, most of these CEOs have MBAs.
Mm-hmm.
Where are the numbers? And you also need to ask yourself a question to say, people knew that there is a loophole there. No, they knew there is a loophole. People knew that a certain amount of money is being lost somewhere. But we still have to wait until things come to light. And that is what is also dangerous in Africa. There is a saying to say, when people don't speak with foot in the mouth, it's only when they are play they come out to say, no, Helmut is also stealing, but we're staying together. But we're staying together. No, I don't care if you arrest both of us, but he's not giving me anymore. He's stealing.
That's when you start spilling the beans.
But to connect your point of illicit financial flow also, it's also a question of capacity within the public sector. It's undeniable that the private sector, which is financially driven, they focus more on talent development and they invest more on rare technical skills. When you look at this graduate of, there's new beautiful course now on finance that is, I think it's a combination of engineering, mathematics and accounting, actuary science. If you look at this new graduate, all these new graduate of actuary science, where are they going? Are they going to work for government? I don't think they are going there because private sector is investing in that aspect.
Yeah.
Look at cybersecurity. It's only
cybersecurity.
All the experts, they move away from public sector to the private sector. But there is one thing that, I think it's a secretary to the cabinet that mentioned at an award ceremony of at public sector award ceremony to say capacity of public sector must be prioritized. Investment in human capacity must be prioritized so that we don't delay projects that are benefiting a lot of people.
Yeah.
In other countries, it can be vice versa. If you need the best engineer, you were supposed not to go to private sector, you go to both. If you need, you must have best accountants, best actuary science graduates, they must be in the public sector. But if you have a CFO and CFO does not have a grade 10 certificate, honestly, guys, how can you run projects and how can people trust you? Imagine if that
trust me, bro.
Yeah, just trust me. Imagine that certain local authority, if it was in partnership with a certain local authority outside Namibia or even a developmental partner and they are investing millions of dollars. Maybe a person have learned through experience, but that person should have made a lot of mistake, jumped a lot of numbers and enter into a lot of this that he does not know or pay people double. People must go and check what is the impact of appointing somebody who is not qualified in that institution. Somebody must make the study to say, what's the impact of that?
You know, one interesting line of work where you find a lot, I think a lot in comparison to a lot of other courses.
Yeah.
It's most fields in IT.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Now, a lot of them are either not. Let me just say
they are developing.
A lot of them in comparison to other fields.
Yeah,
you'll find. You'll find a few that went to school. Maybe just, some of them just dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then just decided to. One programmer.
Mm-hmm.
Pointed out that and this is a guy who is in his I think mid 50s.
Yeah,
and he was explaining that a lot of programmers go into programming because it's a passion. I mean, when we were doing it growing up, and you just mind he's in his 50s. When we were doing it while growing up, we started. It's just something that we did for fun. And when companies started showing up saying that, you know what, come and do this at my company, I'll pay you. And we're like, hang on a second, you'll pay me to do this?
Yeah.
Because I would have done it anyway.
Yeah.
So I think, a lot of them are very passionate about it.
Mm.
And now you have one, if you've seen the documentary, of the former NSA, the NSA whistleblower, Edward Snowden.
Explained
that. Bro went to school, dropped out of school because he had to take care of his sister because the parents were just the marriage was on the rocks at the time, like getting a divorce.
So
he had to play parent to his younger sister.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after dropping out that he just decided to bury himself in computers. Guess who shows up to hire him?
Yeah.
The NSA and the CIA.
Yeah.
But I don't think that you can't use that as a workaround for qualifications.
Yeah.
Otherwise, then look, maybe you can make exceptions, but then because if you just open the door, then you're opening a Pandora's box.
No, you
anyone is just gonna show up. Like, I mean, you did it for that one, so
yeah. You gave a very good example. Just maybe also to end to your point, best IT people, most of them are dropout of universities. Best computer guys, they don't have qualifications because
it's like this is a problem listening.
I think it has to do with practicality or the side
hustle. Oh, it's too much theory.
To practicality and the side hustle become beneficial. That's why they don't concentrate anymore, because these guys, they start coding, they start this thing programming and do all these things. Then one thing, you find him in the room full of maybe 20 computers, and the neighbors are already coming because these are technical problems.
Yeah.
That's why I know a lot of guys, they don't have qualifications, but they are very good. They are better.
Yeah.
And I think there's also an exception. If you look at private sector, they look at your work, but that is not, it's not balancing money. It's not an accounting thing. If I have confidence in you. I can't guess. And somebody may also ask, how did this person get in there?
Yeah.
And how many of them do we have?
At the end of the day, you need to set some kind of standard requirement. Because if you don't have one in place.
Yeah.
Then, a kettle header like Helmut is going to show up. You know, yeah. I also want to be, I want to be a CEO of that company.
Yeah.
I want to be a CEO of an oil company.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about being a CEO, let alone oil.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And if we are not fixing really our institutions, just before we come back to the aspect of infrastructure, if we are not fixing our institution, you create hatred among people. You know, if you have an accountant within that certain region or under that local authority, when they look at this person, they will hate this person, not really because they hate a person, but they look at opportunity delayed. The parents within that area, where they have their children that are at home, even when the jobs are not enough, they look at it as opportunity delayed. And it happened in a lot of aspects, to say the more we take in fixing our infrastructure, the more we take in fixing our system, the wider the wound of those who are doing corrupt practices is going to be.
Yeah.
The wider also the wounds of ripples. And believe me, people what they will not tell you is that other countries, they know our problem.
Yeah.
They cannot fix our problems. But they are also not going to say no if our problems are beneficial to them.
No.
they are also not going to say no. Yeah.
We are not saying no when those problems are benefiting us. What makes you think they will?
Yeah, if you have a weak cyber wall, they want to help you. But if that weak cyber wall allow them to get data, allow them to get information that make them ahead when they have better economic indicators of your country than you. When you are going to do research, when NSA is going to update, bigger companies, they already know where to invest, where to pull out, which gear to put out, because with them they have upper hand in terms of information.
Yeah.
And that can already tell you to say, I continue to reference Nangangwa. It's becoming my favorite these days, but I think he might just also go after this extended term come to an end. No, he said something to say they have a philosophy in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
I think it's also something that has to do with you learning from pain. The philosophy in Zimbabwe to say cities, towns, and industries will never be built by outsiders. You have to do it your own.
Yeah.
You can't get married and you say, no, David, come build my house. I can build the house, but it's you who is building it. You just pay me to build it. But technically, you are the one who is doing that.
Yeah, you must have invested in it.
Yeah, because that will already tell you to say. And it's a natural thing. People don't look at this. If you have people at a certain level of power, That's why they categorize themselves. We are G1, G2, G3, G7. To say you are still within us, but it's a bigger table. Mm-hmm. Do you think they really want Africa to be at that table? If they want Africa to be at that table, why do you think it's so difficult for Africa to get a permanent seat in
Security Council?
Yeah, there is no public leader from the West or East or Europe who said Africa should not get. They are all talking about it within every meeting, every engagement. But when you look at where we are now, why is it so difficult if you still have the same people in the same room that can make that decision? It's not going to happen.
That's
because
how...
you coming closer to a certain level,
yeah.
And I think it's a natural thing. It's like you are playing with your friends, or you are discussing with your friend, and your very small or younger cousin come to you, say, no, this is not your level. Go there.
Go
and play with your mates. But unless that person upgrade himself or herself, yeah, then be able to come at that table. At that table, we only need to, it's us who are going to bring ourselves to that table. Because other than that, it's going to be a very long journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Before we continue with this discussion, Home Run with Helmut and David, before we continue, let's take a live read. Vilvicha University 2027 applications are now open. Faculty of Health Sciences Program Certificate for Enrolled Nurse Midwife/Acushier Level 6, Certificate in Pharmacy Level 5, Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6, Bachelor of Social Work Honors, Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honors, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8, Master of Public Health and of Occupational Health and Safety. Apply now. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Vilvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. You made, you simplified something. Can we just stop saying foreign investor? He's a foreign business person.
Yeah.
Because this technicality is throwing off a lot of people. He's a foreign business person.
Foreign business. I'm dealing with foreign business people.
Not rocket science. He's a foreign person here to do business, not here to donate. We're just complicating things for ourselves here.
I think that was what made him say, what? It's foreign business person.
He's a foreign business person.
Want to come here and make profit.
Yeah. The goal of business is to make profit.
Yeah.
That's it.
I hear you. I think, the usage of the word is also maybe in terms of... being accommodative, and also diplomacy sometimes matters, but we must know the real meaning of thing. You know, you can speak. you know, diplomacy matters, ne? In terms of understanding how to deal with people, either it's guests or outsiders.
Yeah.
But you must know the real meaning of things.
Yeah.
To say, business is profit.
That's
if there is no profit, there is no attraction.
No one is coming.
Yeah, no one is coming. And I think the government of Namibia is really trying its best, especially to say, guys, don't forget that there are people here.
Mm-hmm.
Because if honey starts coming out, the investor is the last person. And this is an honest thing. It's the last person to ask to say, did the Namibia get their shares? Did the Namibia get their shares in that?
Yeah.
They are the last even people to say, how many investment was put in corporate social responsibility? How many investment was put in schools? They are the last person to say that because they are here to for business. And you cannot force people unless you are well positioned or you have a negotiation power.
Yeah.
But like what the president always saying to say, use the leverage of your resources. I think it should not only be a word, that thing should really be emphasized to say, things are in my country. I'm the rightful owner of these resources. You might have capacity, but respect me when I'm on the table. You must respect me when I am speaking. You may have investment that is bigger than our GDP. Yeah, you might have money that is more than any other person in Namibia.
Yeah.
We may look like, in comparison to your business, we may look like a tax shop competing with a commercial bank.
Yeah.
But the respect should always be there. And for us to earn that respect, I think it's based on how we handle ourselves. Not only to say, as long as we get 10%, as long as we get this, we are fine. I think we also need to make sure that when you come to that table, we define that people should respect us. Not begging them, but also we should not underestimate an investor, because an investor that is dealing with you have dealt with others.
Investor,
and you have seen it. Yeah. Yeah.
You are not, okay, now, they have billions because you are not the first person or country they are doing business with.
Yeah, you're not the first person. No. And
they have billions because, look, they have been doing this for years,
which means
they know all kinds of loopholes, which means you have got to be really, really, really careful of how you deal with them, because if there is a loophole that that they can take advantage of, they will. Because let's face it, if there was a loophole you can take advantage of, you're gonna take it.
No, you will take it.
Human nature sucks.
and the other thing is also that what a lot of people are saying, what I observe, what a lot of speakers are saying, I think they are also taking lessons from history. That's why Namibia getting oil last is a bit beneficial, looking at other case studies, because case studies will let you to think differently and to operate differently. But the question is only that to what extent? Because if we have to take a case study of Sudan, we have to take a case study of DRC, a case study of Libya, which is a case study which just it's a fresh one. Libya is not history.
Yeah.
It's not history yet.
2011.
Yeah, 2011. It's not yet history. Those are just information that you should use. Who was a key player there? What are some of the companies that are there? Take the case study of Venezuela.
Yeah.
That just surprised us in 2026, the beginning of 2026. And also see, what did they do wrong? And you must also look at the politics too. To say, are we talking to each other? Is politics talking to business? Is business talking to politics? Is business talking to investors? Is investors talking to business and politics? Are you on the same page? And if we are not on the same page, then we'll continue to have a panel discussion. We'll continue to engage theoretically, deeply, and go to all the beautiful phrases to say, we must. And nobody say, how are we going to do it? And that is a very interesting thing to say. If you are the commissioner of police, of commerce, just to give an example, then the statistics are saying the crime rate is going up regardless of efforts that are being given. Then you are just saying we must fight crimes. But the statistics have been the same in the past 5 years. We must do this. We must make sure. And the question is, how can somebody who has to saying we must, and the question is, who's going to do it?
Look.
Yeah. Who's going to do it? If we just must. Yeah.
Short answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one will.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, no one is going to do it for you.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, okay. When the African Union representative met for this infrastructure development financing in Luanda, which they led to the adoption of the Luanda Declaration, you know what? That's all interesting. Now, one thing that they pointed out, just five major parts, like five things you need to know about Luanda Declaration on financing Africa's infrastructure development. One, this topic is not new. It's not new. Now, leaders endorsed 38 bankable projects, including 13 priority projects, with a combined investment mobilization of $18 billion, a direct outcome of Luanda Summit. The declaration calls the member states to integrate the priority projects into national development plans and national development plans and budgets, and to adopt innovative project preparation mechanism to close the gap in early stage financing along standing barrier to infrastructure delivery.
Mm.
Basically has been observed is that, and this is also true for for international organizations.
Mm-hmm.
When these high level stakeholder engagements are being held,
mm-hmm.
you have a lot of people just saying, you know what, there's a word that I'm looking for.
Mm.
A lot of people just make declarations about how much money they will
put
together. Thank you, that's the word.
Yeah,
they will pledge, we'll put this money to, but it's either it becomes sluggish or it doesn't happen at all. So you have an implementation issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so then you have an implementation issue every now and then.
Yeah.
While just going through this whole, Trans Africa Highway project.
Mm.
That's an interesting story.
Mm.
Fortunately for me, there's one Kenyan businessman
mm.
that just summarized it up in a way of more like complaining.
What
he pointed out was that gentleman. Yeah. And this was in May.
Mm.
And more than 50 years ago, the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, UNECA, which is now being headed by Mr. Katete.
Mm.
Now, the African Development Bank and the Organization of African Unity, now African Union.
Mm.
They came up with an idea. Now, the idea was a Trans-Africa Highway, which I thought was funny because the abbreviation says TA.
Mm.
Now, but I think the goal was...
Is that a Cape to Cairo thing?
This is like a Cape to Cairo. It's connecting different cities, right? They have like 10 layers, like Trans Africa Highway 1, Trans Africa Highway 2, Trans Africa Highway, all the way to 10.
Mm.
I think it's a Trans Africa Highway 3 or 4 there.
Mm-hmm.
Now the idea was to connect Cape Town to Windhoek, and believe it or not, Tripoli, Libya. I like the dream.
Yeah.
But the reason why I said I like the abbreviation TA is that I don't know how it is in Oshuambo, but that's a class an exclamation in my language. Mm. Yeah, when something is more is impressive, we like to say TA.
I hear you.
Yeah. Now the thing is, the Trans Africa Union Highway, Highway AKA TAH network, nine major corridors. Nine major corridors. I found the African Union PDF document, which had like ten corridors.
Yeah.
Now the gentleman here is talking about nine, which I decided to take the African Union one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so now the corridor spanning nearly 60,000 kilometers, linking Cairo to Cape Town, Dakar to Djibouti, and was a physical expression of Pan-African unity. February 2026, that vision is tantalizingly within reach, yet stubbornly incomplete. This is about 40 or 50% complete. The thing is, even though the idea is from the 1970s, it was just given CPR in 2017. That's when they started, the implementation.
I think connecting Africa for good purpose, to me, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But I think we have different understanding in terms of connecting logistics, especially for Africa continental. free trade area.
Yeah.
The same indication that you gave, and thank you that you reference the AU.
Yeah.
It's also the same thing that is being discussed now, especially connecting African airways. You know, Ethiopia being a giant, Ethiopia Airlines being a giant, there have been discussion to say when it comes to continental flights, it's not correct that it's very difficult to fly to Nigeria, and but it's easier to fly from here to UK.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a discussion that was held. But the question maybe we should also ask is the factors.
Yeah.
So the factors that are contributing to the delay of implementation of that, apart from money,
mm-hmm.
because in many cases that we discuss about infrastructure, money is always coming into play. But did Africa develop capacity and skills in things that have been already happening? You can speak about railways.
Mm-hmm.
You can speak about not only civil engineering, but high-level technical people that are dealing with upgraded roads. The standard of our roads that we are using here is not the same standard for the roads that are used in China. It's not the same standard of the roads that are used in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Because their engineering have gone past that.
Mm-hmm.
They have gone past that. Even fixing of potholes is not the same as they are doing them. We are still behind in terms of that. They found ways on how to make to advance their engineering when it comes to that aspect. But the question that we should also ask ourselves is that why every plan that our AU has, every plan that SADC has, every plan of African Development Bank requires external, much of it is external fundings, looking for funds, looking for loans, and looking for aid. Can we not do it with what we have? Why can't we learn from Ethiopia building their Renaissance Dam? Because they owe no one. Even they owe no one a penny or a cent in building the biggest dams. You see, when Dangote built his refinery, people that the first people to fight him are his own people.
I also found that very ironic.
The first people to fight him are the Nigerians. Yeah. He went through a lot of battles with government.
Yeah.
But you ask yourself a question to say,
must be celebrating.
Yeah, in me upgrading myself, am I going to offend somebody? In you becoming independent, when somebody have been helping you and you become independent, you know that it's becoming a threat.
Mm.
When somebody has been assisting you, then you are becoming an independent. Then you must ask that question to say, in our way to the top, to the Africa we want,
yeah.
what's going to be very difficult? Once we understand that, then we can come to say, okay, how do we move along with people? Because Europe cannot go without Africa. Africa cannot go without Europe. We cannot lie ourselves. We need each other. Whether USA have a good president or a president that is unpredictable, we need each other in this economy that we are living in. China, Africa, those people, they need each other. The question is that at what level are we operating? Are we still operating at the level of a beggar? Or we are operating at the level of equal partners? Because that is the aim. There is no way that this thing of connected international economy is going to be ending. Even if we implement what we want to implement, the question is that are we getting the same respect? And what do we need to do? Do we have those right skills?
I think we are still on the stage of KMA Tiger, but on an international stage. Which is very painful because
yeah, I'm a tiger man.
Was that in 2020? Was that last year or the year after last?
Mm.
John Buddy, and I think he's in charge of the Kenyan Central Bank.
Mm.
Yeah, he attended the World Bank and the IMF.
Mm.
In a World Bank and IMF annual events, mm. this other time,
mm.
he came back, and during Kenya's, I think they have an annual holiday to celebrate taxpayers in Kenya, which I thought was fascinating. Now, at one of those events, I think it was last year, he explained something that, you know what, okay, look, when we went to this World Bank and IMF event, the treatment was top tier.
Mm.
But what he found embarrassing, in his words, was that, first of all, from his observation, that a lot of the projects that we have, and he's talking from a Kenyan perspective here, a lot of the projects that we have in this country, we can finance it ourselves if we just brought our minds and money together.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was very embarrassing to be in the queue, being called one by one, as a head of, as a country's representative.
Yeah.
Nigeria, then you get in there for about 30, 20 minutes, and Namibia, and then the next one, you also go in there for next 30 minutes with the executives of these financial institutions.
Mm.
At this point you are, at this point you are on a, okay, how do I put this in a politically correct way?
Some things are not politically correct. Some things are just straight.
You're useless at this point.
Yeah.
Like, plain. Like, you should really... Okay. Look, is it the Italy-Africa Summit, January 2024?
Yeah.
So, Italy.
Mm.
Italy. Have you seen the size of Italy? That's the country that summoned the entire continent. To, for a summit.
No, I think being someone, I think it's our thing.
Yeah.
Being someone is our, I think it's, I think we are used to that, being summoned.
Okay, that's the problem.
Getting, you know, one thing which really pained me is getting African heads of state in a bus at the funeral of, Queen Elizabeth.
Well, they hopped on those buses.
No. I really say no. I think
that was embarrassing.
No, it was really embarrassing.
Yeah.
And you want to attend the Queen's funeral? You don't have any option. And it was embarrassing. But you must also know to say sometimes maybe weakness can also be strength at some point. Look at, let's say our head of state, our head of state went through that embarrassment. Now, you want to tell me that Agenda 2063, by 2063, are we still going to go through that embarrassment? Okay, let that be a lesson to say, we know there are bigger boys, but there are things that we are not going to do. Just pick them, all of them in a bus.
Others showed up with their own fleet.
And they know the whole security, the whole team, everything, the respect, and also the treatment is different. You realize that there are levels. After every level, there are levels. But that is also showing that we are not yet united.
You know what I mean?
As a continent, we are not yet united.
We are not united.
We are trying our best, but we are very far from each other.
You know one thing that I find, confusing?
Mm.
African leaders.
Mm.
Now, look, one of my favorite pieces of African colonial history.
Mm.
Is an operation that was conducted by the British called Operation Legacy. Now, Operation Legacy was conducted in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. The main goal behind Operation Legacy was that the British was facing a lot of pressure, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the Western world with their colonialism, they were facing a lot of pressure because a lot of, the liberation struggle movement was spreading faster than they could contain.
Yeah,
because now, Namibia was working with Zambia and South Africa and Angola. There was a lot of coordination between a lot of these liberation movements.
Yeah.
They were coordinating in a way that basically scared the British and the colonial masters into giving them independence.
Mm.
Like that should be a template of just how powerful we are when we coordinate. But then we, after achieving our respective, our independence, then we decided, I don't think we need to unite anymore. And then now we are more fragmented now we are more fragmented. And the thing is, before you look at the coordination the amazing coordination of liberation struggle movement across the African continent, that led to independence. You have to understand.
Mm.
A colonial country does not give you independence because they were being nice. No.
Yeah.
You are creating a lot of pressure than they can take. That's why they gave you your independence.
Mm, 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 mm.
They didn't wake up one day and decide, you know what? I think what I'm doing. And no. Mm. Because they, you have to understand.
You pressured them.
Yeah, you pressured them.
Had you not
done that,
it would be a different story.
Yeah.
No, it's a very good thing. I think that by then we had the common goal. We still have a common goal now. Then it's only that maybe the economic pain is quite different because this one guy who made me laugh, man, Saki Johannes, one day I was interviewing him. Then in that discussion, he said, no, look, there is the aspect of the capitalist nigger. Because in us implementing our project, you just pay one guy, bribe one person, then can sell the whole country. You know that, and we are doing our very good plan. It's the same thing. Okay, we have a good plan with Africa Continental Free Trade Area. Then one key guy got paid, or one key guy got influenced. Mm-hmm. Then you're not going to work anymore.
Yeah.
But I think with an aspect of liberation, I think the liberation was the liberation of Africa was understood by ordinary people, and they were also supporting that. And I think the economic liberation is not yet understood because it's being spoken about by high technical people. It's being spoken about by
like foreign investor.
Yeah, because if the economic liberation is well communicated, the masses of the people, they will be able to join, and they will be able to know what they can do. They will do their best. They will be able to understand that being a business person does not necessarily mean just to do order with me, which I don't have a problem with, honestly. But it means that selling your surplus that you have made from your field is also business. And making sure that things that you are buying, you can also do them. They were done by people like you. I think it's a very good thing that you brought about that aspect, because I think it's a communication of the economic struggle. People, we are in pain. We need the money. We need the money, but we must be very careful. We need the money. We need the economic upgrading. Mm-hmm. But the problem that we have, we are not speaking the same language. We are not communicating to everybody. And that is something that I always try to say, economic communication, economic simplification.
Yeah.
If we are at that, then you get it. Imagine an executive stand up from any financial institution this time and give an economic analysis on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Kids, they can't wait for the news to go out so that they can look at Nickelodeon, or they look at their, they can watch their cartoons that are kicking each other and all those things. Mm-hmm. But that is a discussion that, if that is simplified, maybe something that needs to be done. But at the continental level, I think to me it's communication. It's not that people are not willing. I think it's communication. And if you don't have somebody who understands, then it's very difficult.
It's selfishness on a leadership level. Because, I stopped believing that politicians are stupid, because they're not. A lot of them have advanced degrees. So they went to school, they studied for these degrees, and a lot of them studied abroad. So they passed this subject because they are smart. Mm. It's that after...
Generally, politics is for... I think it's smart people. I'm not saying they are right.
Yeah.
It's, you have to be smart to be in politics. You have to be smart to be in politics.
The thing is, this whole African Union SADC type of gathering, 90% of it is just is just them being politically correct.
And the political correctness module, we are doing very well. We don't need the supplementary.
Yeah. Now look, this is basically one of those situations where there's a lot of chaos, especially in the public procurement, taking place in all the country. That it would be very difficult for them to have that conversation on an African Union level. Now, just picture Mozambique in the same room with Namibia, South Africa,
and
Senegal.
Yeah.
And someone brings up the discussion of corruption. Who is going to call who corrupt? Because Namibia stands up, they'll say, there's still fish rot under prosecution in your country. Sit down. Yeah. And Mozambique stand up, tuna bone scandal. We know about that. Sit down.
Yeah.
And
South Africa, you?
We're not even going to talk about you.
Yeah. No, you get out of the class.
Just get out of the class. I mean, look, South Africa, as far as I know, is the first country that that had to come up with a political killing task force.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea how embarrassing that is? You know, as a country, you have to come up with a separate police.
Yeah.
To protect whistleblowers.
Yeah.
That are looking into public officials doing things they shouldn't do.
And I think the case of South Africa is very complicated.
Yeah.
When you follow Madlanga Commission, when you follow all this discussion, parliamentary ad hoc committee and things that are coming out, you realize that the economy of survival, the inequality can create
desperation
and can create a state within the state. That's why inequality, economic inequality and state capture, they sit in the same room, because there is always somebody who try to make sure that they get alternative on getting resources.
Yeah.
If you cannot get the favor of a political elite, they always try to make sure that they find somebody who is influencing that. But one thing about South Africa is that when I look at South Africa, when I look at things that are happening in South Africa, one thing you cannot deny is that the institutions of South Africa...
Commercial break.
Okay.
We all save at USave. This week's specials are any 2 2-litre Pepsi, Miranda or Mountain Dew soft drink, just $30 Namibian, 100 grams Frisco granules instant coffee at $28.99, 1 litre long life clover milk, only $22.99, pay just $20 for 8 or 100 cups clover dairy snacks, 500 grams yummy polony at $26.99. USave, your low-budget grocery store where good food costs less.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. 29 minutes left to the hour of 7, and this is Home Run with Helmut and David. So, David, where were you?
Yeah, we were looking at, I was speaking about South Africa.
Yeah.
Regarding what is happening now, to say, when you look at what is happening now, I think it's the sign of institutions being strengthened. Because if you are able to identify wrong things within a short period of time,
yeah,
it means that the institutions are working. And it's a very good sign that maybe in 5 years' time, transformation will happen in South Africa. I don't know how they are going to deal with their inequality, but once you strengthen those institutions, I think it's a different thing. What is scary is when you are in a country, then 5 million is being lost within an organization, then investigation is underway. Until somebody knows exactly where the money went through, or the institution just collapsed like that, to say no, money was sent to an account by who? Then people go home and pretend it's normal. That is what's the most dangerous thing, because that is a ticking bomb. But when you look at South Africa, to say somebody is being dealt with by the law, is being questioned publicly, then you start seeing that the institution at some point they are taking shape. But you find countries that there are not even the report of corruption. There are no, there are no reports.
Now that's just suspicious.
Yeah, just suspicious to say things, the project was started, but instead of completing it for let me say a road that is covering 100 kilometers, you only find it yourself with 20 kilometers and a white elephant project. Then things continue as normal. That's the most dangerous thing. But in terms of progress, I'm a person who never say we are not progressing. Progress is always slow.
Yeah.
But the pace, the speed is the one which is going to slow us, because if we don't move very fast, then other problems will find us. Because it's not only going to be Iran and USA and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
People can start difficult things anytime in a geopolitical arena. There are countries that are not talking to each other. But the question is that where are you going to find yourself? What is your backup plan when who you depend on there is no more assistance coming? Is your economic diversification strategy?
Yeah.
Working in terms of trade? Is your economic diversification strategy working in terms of sourcing experts? Are we diversified enough? Even where we are now, are we positioned enough to survive another storm? Because while we are covering the woods of COVID-19, Ukraine started hitting each other. While we are covering the the woods of Ukraine and Russia, then you have Middle East conflict.
Yeah.
Then
we just got out of COVID-19 and Russia-Ukraine war.
Now Ebola is knocking on the door. Do you know that, I don't want to say it's going to pop up on your door anytime, but that is it's a global emergency. Mm-hmm. As it has been stated to say, Ebola is a global emergency. The question is, are infrastructure going to be able to respond to those situations when they arise? But coming back to the infrastructure, treat a business person as a business person. Treat a donor as a donor.
Yeah.
And also to have confidence when we meet with investors. And that is the only thing I can say about the infrastructure. And also to read history. If you don't read history,
yeah.
If you are not a student of history, because every person was supposed to be a student of history, because historical facts, they don't disappear. Maybe only discover additional one. But any business, from infrastructure to oil and gas, must always be understood from a backward perspective. What happened in history? How did people treat each other in history? How did countries and international cooperation work together? What is the worst, case study? What is the best case study? If we are looking at the best case studies, what are the factors in those countries that have best case studies of dealing with infrastructure? If they have best case studies, how was their governance by then? How was their business community? How was the atmosphere? How was their trade? So that they can become a best, account in terms of that. Because as long as we are comparing ourselves with, you want to be like Singapore, we must ask ourselves, where was Singapore 30 years ago? How was Singapore? In what shape? Because we must position ourselves based on who were they dealing with? How was their governance? Yeah, but yeah, I think that is one thing that we need to look at. Yeah. And maybe Helmut, I think one thing that you should also look at is that when you look at individual projects within connectivity of that roads, were countries given individual projects? Because you just need, there is a continental program, but what individual projects were given to countries looking at that? Was it fragmented that way?
It's supposed to work in the same way that that if you look at this whole different African like blocks, like you have you know, SADC, you have ECOWAS, you have COMESA. Now they have all come up with ideas that using the regional currency. They've all had that plan. Like SADC has had that plan. East African Community has had that plan.
Yeah.
And ECOWAS have just recently announced that they want to come up with their regional currency. Coming by 2020 by 2027.
Yeah.
And just 2 weeks down the line, I think it was Guinea that said, "Hey, count me out."
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, I'm not
going
to do it. Our main issue is our main issue is cohesion. Now, the example the example I used earlier was that one thing I love about the love-hate relationship between the US and China is as much as they trash talk each other on the political arena, just look at how much these guys trade per year.
And they respect each other.
Yeah. Now, as much as they know when to fight, and they know that they both know that neither economy would survive if one disappeared.
Yeah, I hear you.
So now the thing is, for us now, it's like we just we fight on all fronts, on political and economic, which is a terrible idea. And I know that Trump just threw tariff after tariff at China. But the stupid thing about tariff is that that tariff price is going to be paid by an American consumer of the products that are coming out of China.
It's true.
No. Which is why, China is just, it's like being in a fight with someone that keeps punching themselves. Why would you punch them? You might as well just grab a seat. Because, they are doing great on their own.
So the fight has already started there.
I mean, they're helping you by punching themselves.
you are correct. You are correct. I think individual projects matter. I think group work has always been the most difficult thing.
The idea was different blocks, like your intergovernmental organization, like your SADC and COMESA. They come up with their respective currencies by meeting specific economic requirements required to sustain a block currency.
Yeah.
When they meet those requirements, then they can come up with their currency, and after that, then you can just join them on an African Union level. But the thing is, the requirements set by the East African Community, for example, because they gave their an update during their financial update, I think it about a month ago.
Yeah.
Only I think 4 countries out of the 8 or 12 that met. Partially met some of the requirements. So that means the rest are still, lagging behind in terms of just, because you can't just wake up and then declare, a specific, a currency, a block currency. You want to make sure that it's strong enough to compete.
Yeah,
on a global stage.
I hear you.
Because if it's not strong enough, then why come up with the whole thing? Now, to have a currency that's strong enough to compete on a global stage, you must, your countries must, reach a certain level, of economic power, especially when it comes to backing up the currency so that it remains afloat. The problem is when the countries are not meeting the economic requirement needed to sustain a currency on a block level, not on an AU level. Like we are not even on an AU yet, just on a block level. Now, like Namibia, we're not going to have to say anything.
We are not going to
say our currency and national team belongs to South Africa.
No, maybe South Africa subscribe. We are going to subscribe. But the other thing, you mentioned a very important aspect to say you start with regional blocks, then you go to the bigger part. I think that is the idea, but you also start seeing that there is a problem when you say yes to everything. There's also it's quite problematic, and there's a problem when you don't interrogate matters. In the formation of Organization of African Unity, there have been a lot of debates. I think those who read history understood that leaders were debating with each other. the lessons of history taught us to say Kwame Nkrumah and Nyerere, at some point they enter into a fight, not a physical fight, the fights of words,
yeah.
Because there was a debate at international level,
yeah.
Very intellectual debates, yeah. To say this is what we need to do, where do we need to start, this is where the Africa need to, how the Africa need to move.
Yeah.
But one thing that you also need to look at now, we are... The module of political correctness that we have just said that we are passing with flying colors.
Yeah.
But at a practical level, it's becoming difficult. You know why I'm saying this? Look at, there is something called the Pan-Africa Payment and Settlement System that other countries have subscribed. And it's a requirement in Africa Continental Free Trade Area.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Even a country like Namibia, we are still apparently thinking to connect ourselves to that system. Because what we are scared of is, yes, they might be risks that are involved, but it's also a fear of changing. To say, why are you praising Africa Continental Free Trade Area,
yeah.
But when other countries have signed or other countries have started with the Pan-Africa Payment System, you don't even want to try it. You are still thinking. We are still weighing the options. Others who have tried, and there are a lot of things that... we have said, we have subscribed to, we have ratified, but when it comes to practicality, I think it's a different thing. And that to me, I think it's also coming down to communication. We might be all be speaking, but we are not communicating to each other.
Yeah.
That's why if you have an economic researcher within a central bank, you have an economic researcher within a commercial bank, then you have an economist in a public sector. Then they come up with one thing of an economic opinion. If they cannot communicate to the implementer of that... okay.
Commercial break.
Need some help with the groceries this month? Then USAVE has a competition that is just for you. Every Friday between 1 and 2 p.m., Eagle FM will be giving away a $500 USAVE voucher. To stand a chance of winning the $500 USAVE voucher, all you have to do is follow Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and be on the lookout for the weekly competition question. USAVE, where good food costs less.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ningefata Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko, Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Batatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, The Eye.
Welcome back. We are 14 minutes left to the hour of 7. You're still listening to Home Run with Helmut and David on Eagle FM. And it's an interesting discussion to look at Africa infrastructure. Perfecto. From 1970. And now, if I may, okay, now just finish your point first before I bring up my... the Habari Network, Kenyan businessman's point of view on yeah. The Trans-Africa Highway.
No, I just spoke about communication to say we may be speaking to each other, but we are not communicating. And also boiled down to the problem that we have been identifying and we are really not solving it agently. That is coordination, institutional coordination, and also coordination of people and professionals. People must know what is expected from them. If we are all in the economic sector and we don't know each other, we don't communicate with each other, we don't share information, how are we going to fix the economy? If governance has to be successful, you cannot only blame the president who is at the top. You must look at the flow of governance throughout the structure until to an individual. It happens with all the things. With Africa, it shows you that people are not communicating and they are not making each other understand to say, you can fully implement Africa when enter free trade area if you still have borders or you still have strict rules on dealing with people from other other countries within the continent. And you can do that successfully to reach a certain numbers that is indicated if you are not subscribing to Pan-Africa payment system. And many other things, there are things that they will not happen by miracle. There is a system that you need to look at. There are steps actually that you need to look at. There are things that are not going to happen by miracles. There are things that happen after you implement a certain decision.
Yeah.
Then they follow each other. Yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
When the African Development Bank, produced its Africa intra-Africa trade report for 2026, Nigeria seems to be doing significantly better at intra-Africa trade. In terms of the pace that they are increasing their intra-Africa trade initiatives.
Mm.
But there's something that was noticed about the central part of Africa, because it was broken down in regions: Northern Africa, Central Africa, East, West, and Southern Africa.
Mm.
Now, from Central to Southern Africa, for a very long time, a large number of trade, and one thing that you'll find fascinating is that South Africa is, Nigeria may be increasing their level of trade with a lot of African countries, but South Africa is the only one. South Africa and Egypt seems to be dominating trading in processed or manufactured products. The rest of us, we're just trading with each other oil.
get the piece of meat.
We trade billions of dollars worth of, we had billions of dollars worth of trade with David. What did you trade?
Yeah,
it was just lithium. Really?
Yeah.
Was it processed? Nah. And by the way, we didn't even trade. That lithium just ran through David's country to the port.
And then it
left the country.
Yeah.
And you see, first of all, classifying that as trade.
Mm. What are you trading with?
It's painful.
No, it's very painful. And I think it's also a linking. You mentioned... What's the name again? Gatete. How do you pronounce it?
Gatete, the Economic Commission of Africa.
He stated almost what you have just said now at the 46th SADC summit. He gave a presentation there, especially looking at what other countries are doing. Mm-hmm. But what you have stated about South Africa, look at South Africa auto industry and many other things to say, we are doing very well in terms of trade, but what are we trading? Are we still trading raw within ourselves? Because it does not, it's not going to help us, like what you have mentioned. It's not going to help you, because the argument that is presented at SADC, for example, is that SADC economy has grown by 3%, but when you look at intra-SADC trade, the pace is still slow. Speaking about intra-African trade, I think it's just 20% of it. But what are we trading with? This is an interesting question to say. The resources must be processed. Can we coordinate with each other in terms of finalization of those resources? Because it will still go through, and we are still going to buy it again. It's just a delay tactic on trade, but at the end of the day, when you look at it, the bigger picture, it's still Africa which is losing.
Look at it this way: I don't mean to be a party pooper here. I'm just pointing out something that was, the foundation that was laid by Begele Thomas, which is setting, building a road or a railway that's running from a mine to a port is not infrastructure development. Like, yes, it's infrastructure development, but not yours. So it's not, you know, it doesn't account. But look, the Lobito Corridor Group is one, I mean, Lobito Corridor Railway is a, it's an amazing piece of infrastructure. And it's, if you look at the, you know, if you look at the investors, the investors, you know, if you look at the investors and what they do, what they represent, you'll just realize what the, you can easily determine what the institution will be used for. And again, you can't blame them for that. If you wanted a, you know, if you wanted a railway for transporting people, for example, you should have funded your own.
You
can't wait for someone to come and build a railway and then start complaining, ah, why is he not transporting me now? First of all, you said yes to them building it. You said yes to them putting their money in that project. So, like, you don't have a lot of, you know, a lot of grounds to complain on. So, again, they had a, you know, they had a plan over what the project is for.
Yeah.
The plan was to transport their cargo, to navigate some of the challenges that they were facing, and it's pointed out in this document. Some of the challenges they, and, that they were facing is that high transport costs in that part of Africa, especially DRC, because of the because of the lack of in, of transport infrastructure. The second one, the second one is you know, well, truck driver strikes, which were very rampant in, back in 2024. I don't know about now. And the third one, believe it or not, was very questionable civilian-ish, police-ish type of roadblocks.
He's the one which is asking a different kind of license.
Yeah, the, you know, when they say, let's see your papers, they are looking for papers with the Hendrik Deadboy on. They don't care about your, you know, they don't care about your license. But the thing is, they had a challenge. The challenge they had, truck driver strikes, and you have, you know, you have truck driver strikes, and they, you know, dilapidated road infrastructure, and they had, well, those questionable roadblocks. These are the challenges they were having. How did they solve that? They came together, keyword.
Yeah.
They came together, put their money together. The Lobito Corridor project is not a one person or one country project. It's you know, it has taken private sectors from both the US and the EU coming together to put their money together to finance the project. And then you have us that think, you know what, I can solve this whole intra-Africa trade on my own. You can't. You need again to do what? Come together.
No, I think it's a, I mean, it's a fair argument. It's a fair argument to say people that went far, institutions that were built, is a collaboration. And, what I can tell you is that when you speak about collaboration, is something that Africa, we are failing to do. When it's come to collaboration, even working together with each other. You have a caller on the line?
You know, I almost forgot this. This thing is waiting.
Yeah.
Eagle FM, good. 4 minutes?
4 minutes.
Oh, okay. Hey. So it's you.
Hey. Yeah. We are up on it now. The big minds are now speaking the same language. Good evening. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Fine. I think here there is a really compatibility. With you and the young man there. David. How, good evening, David. How are you?
Evening, sir. 4 minutes before we conclude. How are you?
I think for you, you match each other. Yes, yeah. The comedian there. They are telling us the story about Helmut was telling us a story. When he started about Nigeria and what, how the light goes off. But you see, have you people listened to the feedback by the president of Botswana when he was summing up on the on the issue that they have discussed. Even that corridors, all those corridors, they came in there, also their focus. And then when I look at in this presidency, I think I haven't listened to him so for a long time, but he's just so brilliant. When you look at the agendas and those declarations that you people are talking about, it's quite impressive.
Yeah.
You know? But then those foundations...
Can I ask you a question to say... When are we going to praise a person of what he has done instead of what he want to do? Because the speech to me,
that's what he want to do.
It's not the end of it. But we have been having good orators, good president who speak very well. But can we judge based on what they do?
I think they have done a great job because they have laid foundations in which you are building. So. One question that came was also almost irrelevant to what you are saying, because you was asked, why, you know, the problem is implementation and what. Of course, he was hammering on that thing. For example, like when they say no more processing of raw materials and many other projects in different sectors. They were saying, yes, it's true, but we also still have to move gradually so that we don't put things into problem. Because, for example, if we just say stop, suddenly this raw materials can no longer be exported and you have not built infrastructure for processing and many, many other issues. So I think it's just good that we leverage on the proper foundations that is done, that is already completed, and then you build now on that, improve on those, is the railway, all those corridors, was mentioning them, and Namibia. So they want to speak with one voice, and then they emphasize on the trade, intra trading. I think it's one important key. So those questions that David is asking me, they are beyond my comprehension. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you. All right, and we are 7 o'clock on the dot, so that brings us to the end of today's Home Run. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station. From me, y'all have a good evening, especially teachers and police officers.
Yes, they are good friends. Yeah. Bye-bye, and see you tomorrow. Let's extend the conversation.
Yeah.